Our second lesson is from the Gospel of Mark. Jesus has been preaching around the countryside, healing, bringing hope to the people. And Mark writes, Jesus went on with his disciples to the villages of Caesarea Philippi. And on the way, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that I am?" And they answered him, "John the Baptist, and others Elijah, and still others, one of the prophets." He asked them, "But who do you say that I am?" Peter answered him, "You are the Messiah." And Jesus sternly ordered them not to tell anyone about him. Then he began to teach them that the Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. He said all this quite openly, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But turning and looking at his disciples, Jesus rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." He called the crowd with his disciples and said to them, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. For what will it profit them to gain the whole world and forfeit their life? Indeed, what can they give in return for their life? Those who are ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of them the Son of Man will also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the angels." This is the word of the Lord. Well, yesterday it began, the march to the collegiate football championship. All season long, we're going to have the polls and opinions, educated opinions if they have your team up top, not so educated opinion if they have your team down low, but they will one day have to play the game as to who the number one team is. And in 18 weeks, who's counting, that's when the game will happen. But every week from now to then, we will analyze and scrutinize and evaluate and calculate in the atrium before worship and the atrium after worship, and maybe in the sanctuary during the prelude. And we will talk and talk and talk about who will do what, this team, that team, our team. But until the game is played, it's all opinion. And let's be very honest about it. When the playoffs begin, some of us will still be arguing that there's no way that particular team or two should be in the playoffs. But that night in January, it will happen. Polls and opinions will not matter whatsoever. We will see who comes out on top. And in our story in Mark's gospel, Jesus has taken his own poll. Who do people say that I am? And he receives a variety of answers. Educated opinions, they are. Even Peter gives his opinion. "You're the Messiah. You're number one." And I read Peter's answer as an educated opinion because he hasn't seen what it looks like for Jesus to get to the top, to be the Messiah. And when Jesus says that suffering and death and rejection and resurrection is what it's going to look like when he gets to the top, that outcome doesn't fit Peter's analysis, or for that matter, anybody's analysis of what the Messiah should be. Jesus is saying, "This is what it will look like for me as the Messiah." And Peter can't see it that way. "No way, Jesus, I'm not going to let that happen." Jesus tells Peter, he's thinking of human things rather than divine things. And Peter says, "Jesus, when you get to the top as Messiah, I see you as the power and authority of God. Those are divine things." And Jesus says, "Peter, you're spectating from the high seats. I'm down on the field To get to the top as Messiah is the way of suffering and dying, the way, the truth, the life I've been given that is foolishness to the world. You don't see it that way because you're looking at the power rankings, but God sees it that way. Then Jesus hammers the point home. Get behind me, Satan. Literally, depart behind me. Just the opposite of what Jesus had said to Peter when he called him into discipleship. Follow me, or literally, come behind me. He uses the same language in his invitation in our scripture lesson when he talks to all those would-be disciples. If any want to become my followers, to follow behind me, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. Come behind me. What's happened here in our story? Jesus has redirected the question from his lordship, who do you say that I am, and thrown it back to our discipleship. When you get to the top of the world, whose side are you on? Eugene Peterson translates it, get everything you want and find that you have lost you. What have you profited? What have you given for yourself if that happens? It's not who Jesus is, but who you are. When you get to the top, what does God see? No more talk, no more educated opinions. It's plain for all the world to see. And Jesus cuts right to the heart of it in terms of our values and our commitment. When you get to the top, what does God see? When you get to the top, what is seen about your values? Gain the whole world and lose yourself, what's the profit? Jesus is talking about your bottom line. As he said another time, where your treasure is, there your heart is also. Let me tell you a story. A successful businessman was growing old. He knew it was time to step down and choose a successor to take over his business. So he called his six young executives in the company to his office. And he said, it's time for me to step down, and I'm going to choose one of you to be the next chief executive officer. I'm going to give each one of you a seed today. I want you to plant that seed and water it and come back here 1 year from today with whatever you've grown from this seed, and then I'll judge the plants, and I'll choose a CEO who will lead my company. So Jim, one of the executives, went home and was very excited to tell his wife the story, and they got the pot, the fertilizer, the soil, they planted the seed, and every day he watered it and watched it closely to see it grow. But as the months went by, all the executives were talking about how their plants were growing, some beautiful flowering plants, some magnificent bushes, but nothing was happening with Jim's seed, just dirt. And the year was up, time for everyone to bring their plants in. The CEO began to inspect them, was going to inspect them, and Jim told his wife how he was going to be so embarrassed to bring the pot into the office. His wife told him, just take it and be honest. So when the CEO arrived, he surveyed the room, all these magnificent plants, five of them, and he called Jim up first. He asked him, what happened? Jim told the story of how he nurtured it, watered it, and nothing ever happened. The CEO then asked everybody to sit down. He said, I want you to meet your next chief executive officer. And he said, what you don't know is that a year ago when I gave you that seed, it had been boiled and was a dead seed. It was absolutely impossible for anything to grow from it. Jim was the only one with the courage and honesty to bring me a pot with the original seed. He didn't substitute it with another seed like the rest of you did. He didn't try to lie his way through it. He has shown the courage and integrity and honesty that I know will lead this company in the way I wish. Jesus is asking those who would follow him, who would carry on his work, why do you do what you do? When you get to the top of the world, what are you about? What values have gotten you there? And then he asks, when you get to the top, what is seen about your commitment? He says, deny yourself, take up your cross, follow me, even to the point of death. Let me tell you another story. In 1972, a terrible earthquake shook the countryside and city of Managua, Nicaragua. Immediately following the earthquake, there were two dramatic responses by two men to the tragedy, the suffering, the overwhelming loss throughout the area. One of the men was Howard Hughes, at the time one of the wealthiest men in the world. He had rented out the top two floors of a hotel in Managua. After the earthquake, he somehow made his way to the airport and took his private jet and flew to a luxury resort in Europe. The other man was named Roberto Clemente, at the time a superstar baseball player, right fielder for the Pittsburgh Pirates baseball team. And when he heard of the earthquake, he began to charter some cargo planes, started flying into the devastated area with medicines and food and other supplies that were so desperately needed. And on one of the trips, the plane he was on went down into the open ocean, and he was killed. One man was a taker and only thought of himself. He drove, walked, drive by the suffering, and left town. The other man was a giver, thinking only of others. Who really died? Who really lived that day? Howard Hughes, who would string out his life hiding away from the world, freaked out on drugs, and whose immense wealth served only him but could not save him? Or a baseball player who felt he needed to give back to his people like himself and gave his life doing it? It seems to me that these two responses to the same event raise the question of our commitment to a simple question. In light of the needs of this world, in light of our need for Christ, will we be content to fly in or fly out? That's the choice. Now let's put ourselves back there with Peter and all the would-be disciples to whom Jesus is talking. We know the answer to the first question, who do you say that I am? We know the fact of suffering and death and resurrection. We have accepted his lordship. But still, we must answer the question Jesus drives home about our discipleship. Will we follow behind him? Will we move from success as a measure of life to significance as why we do what we do? Instead of making more as a guideline for our life, will making a difference become the daily goal of what we do each day? When you get to the top, what does God see? Or better yet, whom does God see? Jesus leading you all the way. To God be the glory.